Good evening. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio, where we can be found at blogtalkradio.com. I guess I'd call this some semi-reasonably new news. Five players in the state of Iowa amongst the Iowa and Iowa State football teams have pled guilty to charges of underage gambling, basically a plea deal, reduced charge after the state was investigating sports wagering there. So that's going on, but let's get back to business. So we are here today. It's Wednesday, September 6th, 2023. I am here in the official Hank Jones Poly Sports Space Force Observation Outpost with the little Aussie, the mini Aussie. Wife is working over in Acoustic Hank Land. Working hard, I must say. And, yeah, so that's what's going on. The other shows on our network, of course, Mondays, Vito Esposito Show with Vito and Big Al. I'm here every Wednesday from 6 o'clock Eastern, as is Vito on Monday with 6 o'clock Eastern start times. Saturday night, Ministry of Osama Dakduk and the Beautiful Christie, revealing the truth about Islam and other stuff we're still trying to fill in. I'm thinking I'm going to do a hankering tomorrow, but don't hold me to it. I will post it if I decide to do it, but just depends on what kind of time constraints I have with other stuff paddling. Bioluminescent season is winding down, but we're going to probably go in a different direction out in the same area, and of course we will try to include space launches in that, so that's always fun. Hey, Waste Interact. Offline, you can always email me, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Head over to Facebook and look up Hank Jones Poly Sports, if at all, but I am there. And I'm on Twitter, @hpolysports. That's what's going on there. Today's first internet laughy is from the Babylon Bee. This is good. Dopey Joe says, anyone struggling to buy a house should just shut up, set up 20 shell companies and launder money from China. Oh, God. The second, just a regular headline. It says Paris Jackson tells fans why she doesn't celebrate Father Michael's birthday. And we'll see if anyone has the answer to that later. I know without even looking at the article, I don't think anyone else understands why. I mean, she gave some convoluted reason, I'm sure, but that's not the real reason. Very elemental reason. Last week's losses that I deem significant. Last Wednesday saw the death of Mohammed Al-Fayed. He's a rich Egyptian businessman who moved to London. British citizen and was quite the Anglophile, I guess. He's best known as really as being the father of Dodi Al-Fayed, who was the companion of Princess Diana at the time of their death in a car accident back in 1997. Oh, my God. It's been that long. We also lost Dire Straits' other guitarist, Jack Sonny, at age 68. No cause was listed, but Mark Knopfler is famous as the guitarist and the vocalist, but they had another guitarist who basically played rhythm, I'm sure. Thursday, we had three losses. First was Christian author Sarah Young. She wrote Jesus Calling, which became quite popular in the what I call the contemporary Christian community. She passed away from complications of Lyme disease at age 77. Then we lost actress Gail Honeycutt. She made the rounds on shows like Dallas, Taxi, The Love Boat. On the big screen, she played the kidnapped wife of Gene Hackman's character in the movie Target. Remember, he's a former CIA agent, and his son is just shocked as he keeps uncovering each layer, and the wife gets kidnapped. She also appeared with James Garner in 1969 film Marlowe. Finally, we lost former Dallas Cowboys GM Gil Brandt at age 91. He was part of the machinery that led the Cowboy dynasty back in the day, let's just say. Friday, we lost former U.S. ambassador to the U.N., and Secretary of Energy, as well as former Governor of New Mexico, Bill Richardson, age 75. Then, of course, we lost musician, songwriter, entrepreneur Jimmy Buffett, to a rare form of skin cancer at age 76. Yeah, after hitting it big with the rather anthemic Margaritaville back in 1977, he parlayed that into a career as a freewheeling beach bum turned musician who was actually accomplished, and he was quite an accomplished songwriter. Had a horde of followers called Parrot Heads. He later branched out into everything, restaurants, hotels, resorts, casinos, various types of alcoholic beverages. I wasn't a big fan. I do appreciate several of his songs. I get the mood that it sets. When you look at others that paid tribute to him, I mean, most notably Paul McCartney, you kind of got to figure that, he was a little more than just a gimmick. Now, Saturday we lost Mexican rapper Lefty M at the age of 31. This is going to come as a shock to some of you. He died by gunshot. Yeah, who knew? A rapper getting shot. Doesn't happen often, huh? Monday we lost keyboarder and singer Gary Wright of Dreamweaver fame at age 80 to Parkinson's disease and Lewy body dementia. His two biggest hits were the aforementioned Dreamweaver and Love is Alive. He also played with Spooky Tooth in the 60s and 70s, played several tracks on the iconic George Harrison album, All Things Must Pass. They became good friends. We also lost Smash Mouth lead singer. What was his name? I just had it. I didn't even put it down. But he was liver failure. Mike Hartwell, I think it was. Harwell. Age 56, liver failure. He fronted the band from its origin in 1994 until he retired in 2021. They had several hits, of course, of Walking on the Sun, kind of a monster tune. Robbie Krieger from The Doors replayed one of his licks from The Doors on the beginning of that song, Walking on the Sun. They had the other one that's kind of a stadium and arena classic, All-Star. You're at a basketball or football game or something, and they play that song a lot. Yesterday we lost former NFL wide receiver Mike Williams to a construction accident at the age of 36. Started at Syracuse in the 2000s, played for the Tampa Bay Bucks, Buffalo Bills, Kansas City Chiefs. And, of course, I could always look and see if there's any more breaking ones. Breaking, I hate to do that because it's like I'm prowling for dead people. I'm not doing that, people. I'm just, I'm kind of looking and seeing what's – oh, okay. So we lost Adnan Al-Kasi. Iraqi professional wrestler. I don't think he might have been Iraqi, but I don't think he was really, he did do that gimmick during Desert Storm of, sort of like what the Iron Sheik was doing, but he did it with Iraq at that time. He's only, I'm looking in the wrong way. He's 84. So yeah, it's kind of, his real name was Adnan bin Abdul Karim Ahmed Al-Kasi Al-Farti. Jeez. It's a long name. He married a woman named Kathy Davis. So, yeah. His other ring names, Adnan Al-Kasi, Billy White Wolf, General Adnan, and then Sheikh Adnan Al-Kasi. He actually teamed up with the Iron Sheik, of course, back in the day when it was, popular to do so. So, yeah, that's going on. That's what we lost this past week. Don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center and answering service and messaging center for your medical clinic, hospital clinic, information gathering, large service company, small service company, government agencies, believe it or not. They work with remotes as well, so they can get the job done, and they can get it done in a way that couldn't be done before, i.e. when a snowstorm or a hurricane or something bears down on your main office. It doesn't matter because your switch is in a protected area, and you have remote ops that can work from anywhere. So if you like remote work, give them a call. If you're one of those companies that's never going back to the office after COVID, also give them a call. 800-555-3738, or look them up on the web, alliancecommunications.com. I know I keep saying I was going to let this die, so to speak, but the more stuff on Tafari Campbell, the personal chef of the Obamas who died back in, gosh, June, I guess, June or July. By the way, talked about how you can access the show. I forgot to mention, you can come in through the chat room. You can listen online without an account. You can come in through the chat room. Duck Northwest Media has entered the chat room. Good afternoon, sir. And you can also call 319-527-6706, as Hawkeye Mike has done, and that's one of the people that's going to be on a little later. Anyway, more interesting items on the Tafari Campbell death. They say now the headline is "Mystery Deepens." It just basically, Judicial Watch had to use a FOIA request to get it. Basically, Secret Service had reported the disappearance before, at the time. Basically, his clothing was found apart from the body. It says a life vest was not in use. Computer-aided dispatch incident report. So basically, Secret Service advised that swimmers were unable to locate the party at this time. Party last seen wearing all black on a paddleboard, African-American male. Received 911 call from the above. Noted the reporting person who identified as a Secret Service member. RP is requesting at least an ambulance response, unsure of the exact services needed. RP advised best access is from the residents. They are deploying a rescue swimmer and a Zodiac boat right now. Advised no life vest worn. They have recovered the paddleboard and the clothing. They still have a boat and rescue swimmers in the area. Huh? This does get weird. Clothing is found, but the paddleboard is found. Let me read that again. They've recovered the paddleboard and the clothing. Nothing about the paddle. I said he wasn't obvious. They later said he wasn't leashed. I asked about that initially. Noted that they were unable to find the individual at that moment. The missing party was last seen dressed in all black, blah, blah, blah. 9/11 call was received, who identified as a member of Secret Service, but uncertain about what was required. Best worn. Still no contact at that time, blah, blah, blah. Documents noted at 8:25, the Oak Bluffs Fire Department deployed a dive team. By 8:36, both a Coast Guard and a state police helicopter were in the air. Police Chief Bruce McNamee, who sent the reports, mentioned in his accompanying email that the names of a witness and a Secret Service agent had been redacted as per the request of the Massachusetts State Police. So now they're saying witness. They're not saying staffer. Notice that? They're not saying staffer. They're just saying witness. Base for search operations was set up. The commonly used boat launch, dive and search teams from Oak Bluffs, Tisbury, and West Tisbury were involved. Following day, Sergeant William Bishop stated, once on location at Wilson's Landing, we established a command post. I requested through MSP, Massachusetts State Police, I assume, a search helicopter, and Chief Scheffler requested a U.S. Coast Guard helicopter as well. Search and dive teams from Edgartown, Oak Bluffs, Tisbury, West Tisbury responded via mutual aid. An extensive search began for several hours. A last known location was established, and Trooper Shaw of MSP also assisted with operations. I instructed Officer Guest and Officer Dacey to commence a shoreline search effort starting from the close house and working outward. Both officers checked every house waterfront access in the search area. Unfortunately, the search did not yield any results. Both air wings conducted a search until their fuel supply forced a return to base. At about 11 p.m., the dive and land search was suspended. Edgartown and Oak Bluffs Fire plan to continue a grid search for the remainder of the night. At first light, dive team operations will continue. During the duration of this incident, the entrance to Wilson's Landing was closed as to give responders room to work. Popular boat area. That's not uncommon, by the way, that part. I mean, we might say, oh, they were closing it off to stage the scene. Eh. It wouldn't need, they could close it off for a myriad of reasons, and it would be legit. So next morning, the dive team search continued, and the deceased Mr. Campbell was located using sonar. Now, investigation will now be handled by Massachusetts State Police and the Cape and Islands District Attorney's Office. No further action. Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton said, "It is concerning that Judicial Watch had to push and push for information on this tragic death, such as the new revelation that the Obama's Secret Service Protection reported Mr. Campbell missing." Oh, that we kind of knew that. It's kind of been brought out. But as I said, things keep getting brought out. Now, it's not a staffer anymore. It's interesting. Now, I know it's going to sound like, you know, hey, you know, this is weird, or Hank's reaching for whatever. No, I'm not reaching here. First, it was a staffer. I was just a witness. No mention of, you know, who this might have been. So, yeah, I don't know. That's weird. That's, to me, that's weird. You know, why? Why not just mention a staffer? Why does a staffer's name have to be kept secret? Okay, to protect that person. But, you know, it's public stuff. So that's not right. And again, they keep throwing out little tidbits based on what other people have asked. Oh, God. I know. I keep saying I'm going to stop on that, but I don't. With the stroke of a pen, Dopey Joe canceled roughly $72 million in student debt across approximately 2,300 borrowers. Now, if this was actually lawful and not a vote-buying scam, each of those 2,300 borrowers would, on average, receive a Form 1099-C for approximately $31,300. Yeah, that's forgiveness of debt. So Epic Times reported, and a couple others are reporting on it. Basically, $72 million forgiveness provide relief for students who were defrauded by a California-based online school. Apply to more than 2,300 students who attended Ashford University, a former online for-profit school based in San Diego, the U.S. Department of Education announced. Been approved under the, quote, borrower defense, unquote, student aid program that has been in place for decades. Under the program, student loan borrowers who were misled by for-profit colleges could apply for forgiveness. The loan forgiveness was approved after DOE reviewed evidence presented by the California DOJ in its successful 2017 lawsuit against Ashford and parent firm Zovio. So they engaged in deceptive practices to mislead students. On March 3rd last year, 2022, a court ruled in favor of the Department of Justice, judging that Ashford made more than 1.2 million misleading representations nationwide to prospective students. Based on a review, DOE approved loan forgiveness for Ashford's student borrowers who have filed for debt relief under the Borrower's Defense Program. Relief is applicable to borrowers who enrolled in Ashford between March 1st, 2009 and April 30th, 2020. Considering they said this happened in 2017, they first got this judgment. Said, as the California Department of Justice proved in court, Ashford relied extensively on high pressure and deceptive recruiting tactics to lure students. Today, we are protecting the students who were cheated by Ashford, and we will also hold the perpetrators accountable, protect taxpayers, and deter future wrongdoing. Well, you know, I can think of a way you might do that. If it's really true, make Ashford pay for it. Make Ashford pay him back. And who holds those notes? Who holds that money? Who holds the debt? I mean, is Ashford also handing out student loans? That doesn't seem right. Certainly doesn't seem right to me. Why would that be? You know, I mean, it's not even mentioning who underwrote this stuff. Gee, I wonder why. Yeah. Very interesting. Be Joe from doing all this, of course. said can't do this. Doesn't seem to stop them. They find any reason. Borrower defense injunction. But guess what? Faced a setback in court too. New rules took effect July 1st, but the New Orleans-based Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit issued an injunction against the new regulations on August 7th in a case brought forward by the Career Colleges and Schools of Texas, which represents more than 70 for-profit educational institutions in the state. DOA says it won't judge any borrower defense applications under the latest rule unless and until the effective date is reinstated. It would apply only to all claims pending on or received on or after a certain date. BS. Now, in the Asher case, the DOE found that the school had, quote, engaged in extensive substantial misrepresentations. Recruiters told students that they would be able to work as teachers, nurses, social workers, and drug and alcohol counselors, even though Ashford had never obtained the necessary state approval or accreditation to allow students to enter these professions. Remember that phrase, caveat emptor or buyer beware? So they also lied about the cost to attend Ashford, the amount and type of financial aid students would receive, and the amount of debt students would accumulate. Compared to traditional four-year colleges, Ashford's programs took 5 academic years to complete. So nobody finishes in 4 years anymore. It says the loans will be discharged. So they will send an email. Federal loans zeroed out, credit trade lines deleted. It says any payments those borrowers made to the department on their federal student loans will be refunded. It was acquired by the University of Arizona in 2020 and has been turned into the University of Arizona Global Campus. I got a question. I wonder if any state schools, it says this applies to for-profit colleges. So, yeah, obviously state schools or non-for-profit colleges, it doesn't apply, which is weird. This is nothing more than vote buying. This isn't really anything other than that. A few quickies. U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit upheld Michael Avenatti's convictions on extortion and wire fraud. Let's see. Threads, which is Meta/Facebook's Twitter alternative, has already lost 80% of its active users. Let's see. Tucker Carlson was on Adam Carolla's podcast. He predicted that La Dopi Nostra will conduct a, quote, hot war with Russia in order to get Dopey Joe reelected. Moving on, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. wants 3% government-backed mortgages per a campaign speech in South Carolina, I believe it was. That's okay, so I'm going to read it. It's from Newsmax. RFK Jr. wants 3% government-backed mortgages. On the campaign trail in South Carolina, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. proposed that if elected president, he would introduce a 3% mortgage rate for Americans backed by the government and funded through the selling of tax-free bonds. Yeah, because people are going to just totally jump on 3% tax-free bonds. Democratic hopeful put forth that he would strive to hinder large corporations from gobbling up single-family homes in the United States in a speech chastising the Biden administration over the rise in food prices, credit card debt, energy costs, and home prices. During a town hall, Kennedy said, in the last 2 years, the price of housing has gone from average of $250K to $400K. Interest rates have gone up 20%, and we don't need to have that happen. There are ways that the federal government can help people without driving up the debt. Really? I'd be very interested to hear that. Americans are being shut out of the American dream, Kennedy continued, saying, This crisis is directly due to companies like BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard. No, it's not. Stop it. Everybody's doing this. Everybody's going on, you know. Anyway, let me continue. According to an academic paper published in 2017 by Cambridge University Press, those three firms constitute the largest shareholders in 88% of these S&P 500 firms. Yeah, but they're not. People not understand institutional investing. He says, and now they have a new target, which is to gain ownership of all the single-family residences in this country. And they are on a trajectory to do that. Is this guy serious? Usually, when a company buys a home with a cash offer, there is an LLC with an ambiguous name. It often can be traced back to one of those big companies. Kennedy then added that Larry Fink, BlackRock CEO, is a World Economic Forum board member. Dude, so is half of your family at some point. Says the WEF is a billionaire boys club that meets in Davos every year and has a plan, which is New World Order and what they have called the Great Reset. Klaus Schwab, who wrote the book on that agenda, says that you will own nothing and you will be happy. They are well on their way to accomplishing that first part. My God, this has come full circle. This family, these people are attempting to whitewash the whole thing and pretend that they are like champions of the people. You got to love those folks that want him as Donald Trump's running mate. You really do. I mean, RFK Jr. And I, you know, the other meme that was really kind of sad was when they would do the President Trump looking at John F. Kennedy's thing and saying, I'll finish what you started. We didn't say that. Yeah, you got to love it. You just got to love Trump's running mate. Yeah, wrong. Yeah, hell no. Hell no. Seriously, this is exactly the kind of thing that got us where we are, i.e. free or cheap money being thrown around with no basis for it working, let alone a snowball's chance in hell of being even remotely quote-unquote successful. Kind of almost reminds me of the early 2000s. Remember we had people making $40,000 a year that had like $500,000 houses, and all they were doing was they were making interest payments? They never had a hope of making the eventual balloon payments, but they were told they could. It is literally economic insanity. There are actually idiots walking this country who believe that if you just give people stuff and outlaw capitalism, that people will be happy and be able to provide for themselves and their families in eternity. These are the same idiots, like RFK Jr., who go around saying five corporations run the world, which usually includes the name Bush, but somehow skips over names like Kennedy, Buffett, Gates, Soros, and all. God, idiots, just the idiot patrol just doesn't stop. Former Secretary of Labor Robert Reich, all 4 feet, 11 inches of him, claims that Americans will be, in a manner of speaking, working for robots down the road. Now, get a load of this. He actually did an interview on Fox Business Channel, I believe it was. It says Americans, polls show Americans are concerned about the use of tech in daily life. Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich is warning that artificial intelligence will transform the relationship between employers and employees, and that many Americans will find themselves working for the rapidly growing tech. Reich, who served as Labor Secretary during the Clinton administration, stressed in an interview that the tech may increase efficiency, but will also be extremely destabilizing for the U.S. middle class. He noted that 16 to 38% of workers are independent contractors and said AI is going to create a different kind of employment relationship. We're not going to be working for big companies. We're not going to be working directly for them. We're going to be working for AI intermediaries and platforms, said in an interview with CNBC. Those intermediaries and platforms are going to be paying us a kind of spot auction rate. That is, what is our demand at the moment? Now, you might say that's very efficient, but is also extremely destabilizing in terms of our lives. I mean, How can we possibly plan our lives if we are in a spot auction market in terms of what we earn? Things we take for granted, all of the labor protections of the last 120 years, everything, AI could eradicate all of them. AI takes over the world, like Skynet. The rapid rise of AI has raised both excitement about the potential for such advanced technology and also concerns about the implications that come from its broader use in society, particularly how it affects the workplace. It says a recent Pew Research survey found that a majority of Americans are more concerned than excited by the increased use of AI in daily life, a number that has increased dramatically the last few years. Yeah, you know what, though? Well, I'll get to that in a second. Meanwhile, lawmakers have also been monitoring the topic, with Senator Chuck Schumer signaling he is serious about pushing through a regulatory framework for the technology. Dude, when Skynet becomes self-aware, your regulatory crap won't mean a thing. He says, this is not going to be easy. It will be one of the most difficult things we undertake. But in the 21st century, we cannot behave like ostriches in the sand when it comes to AI, he said in a letter. We must treat AI with the same level of seriousness as national security, job creation, and our civil liberties. I'm afraid, Chuck. Afraid. Open the pod bay door, Senator Schumer. God. Reich suggested that the rise of the technology would require rethinking long-debated ideas, such as a universal basic income. Only Robert Reich would make that leap. People have got to have enough money in their pockets to buy all the things that the new economy is capable of producing. No, it doesn't. Why do people conflate the new economy, what it's capable of producing, and that everybody has to have it or that everybody's entitled to it? He says, if you've got AI and all these platforms and you've got people who are basically no longer needed, huge numbers of people, how do you get money in their pockets to buy everything the economy is capable of producing? The four walls, man, your house, your clothes, your food, keeping the lights on. You're not entitled to cable TV or every luxury channel, every, you know, pay-for channel. Because you simply can't have an economy under those circumstances. This guy literally worked in our government. Now, first of all, 16 to 38%, that's a pretty wide spread. That's pretty exact, as in not even. I can guess what inspires such talk from Reich. My guess, he doesn't own or control any stock in any AI companies. Notice he didn't mention financial markets or monetary systems. Didn't mention students being taught via AI. Yet. Yeah, because he invests in banks and he teaches at Cal Berkeley. Seriously, where were these guys 10, 20, or 30 years ago when Arnold Schwarzenegger was marching around on our screen in his Terminator outfit? What were they saying back then? Oh, it'll never happen. It can't ever happen here. Hell no. That can't happen. That possible. What a dork. Seriously, universe... He says he makes the leap from AI to universal basic income. As if it's going to just manufacture money. And that's what he probably believes, actually. That's part of the problem. These guys don't get that. They really don't. I mean, this guy served as Secretary of Labor in an administration appointed by a president. Yeah, it's no small wonder we're having the kind of problems we have. Okay, so here's some disturbing stories from the world of college or college sports. First, an Oberlin College coach come under fire. Oberlin College is that massively liberal institution, I don't know, Ohio or somewhere like that, one of those vol-ending states, berated for stance on trans athletes in women's sports, says she never broke school rules. She was interviewed on Laura Ingram Angle. Basically, she is the coach at a liberal arts school in Ohio. She continues to speak out regarding transgender inclusion in women's sports. She's been at the center of a large debate with Oberlin College after she talked about how administrators and her players ridiculed her after she posted her personal viewpoint about Leah Thomas winning an NCAA championship in 2022 on social media. It's Will Thomas, but whatever. Russell reposted a headline that sarcastically congratulated former Virginia swim star Emma Wyant for defeating Thomas, a transgender female, where the Yo Woman head coach wrote, "What do you believe? I can't be quiet on this. I spent my life playing sports, starting and coaching sports programs for girls and women." Oberlin, where administrators stepped in to ridicule her. She reported those conversations. She recorded those conversations, which were played on the Ingram Angle, and are featured in the Independent Women's Forum documentary she participated in. Unfortunately, you fall into the category. Here's what Associate Vice President of Athletics said to her. "Unfortunately, you fall into the category of people that are kind of filled with hate in the world." Really? It's acceptable to have your own opinions, but when they go against Oberlin College's beliefs, it's a problem, Senior Associate Director of Athletics said. Ingram's first question to Russell was whether the head lacrosse coach had broken any rule. She said, "None. There were no rules that I was breaking. I was speaking my belief, my opinion. When I took that to the college with a letter from my attorney, I said, if I am breaking university policy, please tell me what that policy is. Please do it in writing. And if you're going to fire me for breaking that policy, please do it now." May Mailman, senior legal fellow for the Independent Women's Law Center, was also present. She highlighted Oberlin College's specific missions and values. Funny enough, Oberlin College's missions and values, which is on their website, says that they foster an environment that is respectful of divergent viewpoints. That's the type of students they want to recruit. Oberlin College delivered a statement to the Ingram Angle where it said, "Freedom to express one's views is a cornerstone of our democracy and is certainly important to our Oberlin College community." However, when posting on social media, Oberlin College said staff should, quote, "reflect upon any potentially negative posts and the impact they could have upon your ability to effectively perform the roles and responsibilities of your job." By the way, what did she do that would – she explained, went on to explain that it was one player on her lacrosse squad that went director right to the athletic director, and the athletic director came to me, and that's how this all started. Russell was told to write an apology letter to the athletics department and the team, but didn't do it. Riley Gaines said, "This is really huge. The voice we've been missing is that of coaches. Watch this to understand why so many remain silent, even though they know what they're being told to do is wrong." She said, "Thank you for putting your name to this." She said she's willing to have a conversation with anyone on the topic, this is Coach Russell, but won't hide her passion about it. "I really believe women should be competing against other biological females. We've heard from other coaches who want to be leaders for their teams," Mailman added. "It is up to the adults. We can't let the whole obligation for women rest on college kids. There have to be coaches that speak up and protect women." Oberlin has asked her not to attend certain events. This would never happen to a men's coach who stood up for male players. Good point. Russell made waves when she said she felt like she was burned at the stake when she had a meeting with the lacrosse team, the athletic director, the Title IX officer for her department, and a diversion equity and inclusion officer, Title IX director, and DEI officer for Oberlin College. She said, "I felt like I was stoned and hanged all at the same time." She later added in the documentary her opinion that it is scientific that biologically males and females are different, period. "I don't believe biological males should be in women's locker rooms. Where's the Me Too movement now? What happened to that?" Huh. And she ended her interview saying, suing Oberlin is on the table. So that's kind of disturbing. This, from Madison, Wisconsin, i.e. the University of Wisconsin, defunded Wisconsin police to increase patrols after a young woman brutalized in college football town attack. Subheadline, University of Wisconsin-Madison student suffers life-threatening injuries after off-campus sex assault. That's weird. So it's off-campus, but yeah. Wisconsin State Capitol and a Big Ten football staple is upping police patrols after a female student at the university was targeted in a violent and severe attack early Sunday morning, according to city leaders. Madison and UW police are increasing patrols, and the campus community is urged to be vigilant following a violent early morning attack in the area of blah, blah, blah. Police responded to the intersection block from Lake Monona around 3:20 a.m. Sunday and rushed the victim to the hospital with what they called life-threatening injuries. Authorities believe it was a stranger assault taking place in the early morning hours after the Badgers football team won their home opener, 38-17. Yeah, see, they're trying to pull the football into this. A friend of the victim told Milwaukee's WISN-TV that she was found with a broken jaw and had been strangled, beaten, and sexually assaulted. An unnamed neighbor said the victim had been abducted off the sidewalk and dragged between two houses. Where the hell was that neighbor? Police were looking for one or more unidentified suspects, but have not yet released a description. And anyone with information, blah, 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 Wisconsin, Madison, slashed $2 million in public police funds in 2020 in response to protests against police brutality. Said prompted police leaders to seek outside funding through federal grants and other programs. Since we've called in numerous Madison police personnel on this holiday weekend to conduct a thorough and complete investigation. In an eerily prescient Reddit post from the start of last year's fall semester, a young woman asked if it was safe to walk in the city late at night. Would you feel safe walking home alone this far around 3 a.m.? She wrote, I don't know if I'm overthinking it or if I should just take an Uber. The top reply said, would I recommend it? No. Now, police are asking residents to avoid walking alone in the area, especially at night, and to keep an eye out for their surroundings. Madison, Wisconsin. Finally, to the more bizarre, MSDNC host praises trans sorority member accused of peeping, threatening behavior. MSDNC host called the trans sorority member brave and one of the a very brave woman. Good God. So MSNBC, otherwise known as MSDNC, did a sympathetic interview with a transgender sorority member from the University of Wyoming after the student was accused of peeping on girls, photographing them, and asking them about their sex lives and genitals, according to allegations in a lawsuit. Artemis Langford is a transgender student, biological male, who joined the Kappa Kappa Gamma sorority chapter last October. Girls came forward in a suit in March expressing their discomfort with sharing living quarters with Langford. The left-wing network's host, MSDNC, Yasmin Basujian, interviewed Langford Sunday and suggested that the trans sorority member's story was about a lack of acceptance among girls in the sorority. Basujian called Langford a brave woman. The case has drawn widespread attention as schools continue to be a front line in these fights for LGBTQ rights. And for the very brave woman at the center of it all is joining me now. Good God. Langford is a student who made history last fall as the first openly transgender woman to join a sorority. Being the first can be incredibly hard, and this case is no exception. But this week brought some very good news for Artemis. After several current and former sorority members sued the National Sorority to revoke Langford's membership, a judge dismissed the case on August 29th, claiming that no policies were violated in allowing the trans student to join. The judge also added that it wasn't the court's place to determine what a woman is. Plaintiffs request the court to insert itself into this controversial political debate and declare that a private organization can only interpret the term woman using plaintiff's exclusionary definition of biologically born females. What in the hell? According to the allegations, Langford has been, quote, watching the female members of the sorority house. It also alleged that during one of these incidents, Langford had a visible erection. Langford also repeatedly questioned the women about what vaginas look like and about their breast cup size. On another occasion, a sorority sister said Langford became sexually aroused looking at a girl without a shirt on. Student said Langford returned and stood silently in the corner of the room near the door while other pledges changed from sleeping garments into other clothing. The sorority girl did not know that Langford had returned. The girl removed her shirt. After she had put on a new shirt, the girl turned around and discovered Langford staring at her. After the morning activities, a Another Kappa member informed the girl that while watching her, Langford had become sexually aroused. Lawsuit also alleged that Langford had limited verbal interactions with the girls, but would stare often. Instead, Langford stares, following the women with his eyes. Langford has, while watching members enter the sorority house, had an erection visible through his leggings. Other times, he has had a pillow in his lap. Lawsuit also accused Langford of conduct that was inappropriate and threatening. MSDNC's segment did not raise the specific allegations in the lawsuit. Fox News Digital reached out to MSDNC and received no response. The trans sorority member described hostile treatment by some students on campus. One person came out to me saying that, oh, they're going to pray for me. Others have been just very hostile with acts of aggression or glares and bumps into someone purposely tries to hit into you. Lawsuit claims Langford violated sorority policies by joining a sorority despite, as it said, not being a biological woman or making efforts to appear female. And if you look at the picture on this that accompanies this article, it's not even close. He has not undergone treatments to create a more feminine appearance, such as female hormones, feminization surgery, or laser hair removal. Plaintiffs often observe Langford with the facial hair one would expect on a man who either did not shave that morning or whose facial hair was regrown by the evening. Host then asked the trans student what made Langford, quote, want to stay, despite everything you've been through. Langford told MSDNC, I'm certainly not the first trans person to ever be attacked. I don't think I'll be the last. But I want people to know that it's never okay for that kind of scrutiny to be on a person just because I'm trans. First of all, you're not trans. You're a freak. And I hope that even if there's one person out there that feels their identity is being attacked, that it's okay to be who they are. And it's never okay to be attacked for an identity. What the actual hell? First, this should be a no-brainer. Members should be quitting the sorority. There is zero reason for them to put up with this kind of crap. Like I said, one look at the house pick, where there are a bunch of sisters there, tells me this is a sham and has been from the beginning, that a national, seemingly respected sorority will allow this at any chapter is almost frightening. That a state university allows it isn't really shocking, especially when you see that that state happens to be Wyoming. Now, that may be a conservative state, but Liz Cheney served as a congressperson. Her sister is married to another female. Now, of course, I realize TG isn't the same as L, which somehow both get included in the whole LGBTQIAZY whatever garbage. But the slippery slope has certainly been stepped on at this point. I mean, the duplicitousness of Dick Cheney, former VP Dick Cheney, who suddenly, remember, all during office he didn't, but when he left office, he suddenly supported gay marriage. Now, that's par for the course in politics now. I get that. But again, that's not even the problem here. That's not the problem. What we have here is a creep using the I identify as to join a sorority, enter and live in the house, and act like a full-on creep around the members. Seriously, the fact that the members of this particular chapter haven't had a blanket party to castrate this guy hints at something even creepier. There are most likely members, and maybe even parents of members, who don't see a problem with this. Trust me, this is a serious problem. And it could potentially end up with the same type of problem referenced in the previous story, i.e. sexual assault and rape and whatever else. God, just gross. Taking a quick break, then I'm going to come back with college football. We'll discuss week one, predict week two. Avid Mike and I had a couple predictions. In my case, I was totally spot on. Going to play a song from Robbie Robertson and the band. Said I was going to do a little tribute to Prince, as great guitarists who are no longer here. I'll be back in a few minutes, folks. Thank you. And we are back on Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio. Remember the number to call, 319-527-6706. And I have someone on the line right now. Mike, you there?
I'm here, Hank. How's it going?
Good. How you doing? You're the only one that was able to make the call today. So we got some, which is kind of awesome
okay.
in a way. I mean, I'd invite others, you know, the other rest of the group, but hey.
enjoyed listening to others too. I long day of work, so had to get a quick adult beverage here. So I just
and
got
what is your beverage of choice? What is your beverage of choice?
It's a Corona Light with a twist of lime. You got to have the lime.
Yeah, when I saw that message, I thought, you know what, I'm going to crack out something myself. I grabbed a Magners Original Irish Cider. So I was on a paddle about a month and a half ago. It was right after my wife had left for Seattle to house sit for the daughter. And I had these Irish people on a paddle, and they told me I had to try Irish ciders. That they're better than English ciders. And they didn't even mention American cider. So I bought this one that they recommended, and it's not bad. I got to say, it's okay. So
okay.
Can I
ask you a quick question?
Absolutely.
What was the music you're playing on the break?
That sounded almost like
Eric Clapton.
It was the band, Robbie Robertson, and it's called Chest Fever from Music from the Big Pink. And it's sort of a lot of people don't hear his guitar. He sort of grinds it along with the organ. And I think if I remember correctly reading that he, on some of that album, he actually played through the organ amp type stuff. So he was kind of innovative that way. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did you see Rolling Stones have a new album out called Acne Diamonds?
I mean, how... How old is the oldest Rolling
Stone? 18 years since their last. They're 80. Mick just turned 80, so you know what that means too. If they've got an album, they're probably going to tour.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Charlie Watts is gone. Bill Wyman left. I mean, it's just kind of.
Yeah.
I mean,
they haven't had Wyman for 20-25 years.
Yeah,
think,
exactly.
So.
He hasn't been. And Charlie obviously died back in 21 or 22. So.
Yeah, so we'll see how it goes.
That's a daunting. And, you know, the thing is, that's just it. You know, as T. Bodie has pointed out, they really make their, you know, groups make their money now not by music sales, but by touring, you know. So they have to kind of support that. So, you know, McCartney's in that same age range, but Paul McCartney looks a lot younger. And I don't want to say than Jagger, but he certainly looks a lot younger than Keith Richards. I mean, you know, it's hard to believe that.
Keith Richards, you remember when he was about 50, he had like a full body blood transplant plant.
Yeah, he did it.
He went
about
to Switzerland and he drained all of his blood because he was so strung out on drugs.
He made the comment that he could quit any time after that. I mean, I don't know how.
He does that. Literally a new person. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, I don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if they do tour. If they come near Orlando, I'll probably try and go. But.
Someone texted me that there's a song, they've listened to the song called Angry on the album that was pretty good. So
yeah, I read that.
I saw that headline today.
So, also talk about paddles. I've been seeing some launches lately. I don't know if you've seen me posted them on Facebook, but those, I've seen some good ones too, right? Yeah. That one I just saw you, thank God you messaged me about it because we were literally at that point putting away all the equipment from our paddle. And so, you know, you said it should be seeing it. So we looked up and it just came right, you know, above us, like sort of into the western sky going sort of like, you know, west to east north of us. And it was really cool. I mean, it was just, you know, just that streak through the sky. But we've been
doing launches now, aren't they? About every couple of weeks, something's going on.
They just sent up their 62nd, SpaceX did, of this year. So that's a record. And but also, we're seeing those Starlink satellites. I don't know if you've ever seen those. It's a line of them that comes over, and there's like 22 of them in a line. And it looks like this long line of lights. It's really cool. It's spooky in a way if you don't know what it is. So
it's kind of an added feature to your paddleboard excursion.
Yeah. Exactly. So anyway,
if you happen to have it.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. We can't really plan a tour around a launch because if we get 20 people there and no launch, then they get pissed. But, you know, so we have the bioluminescence and all this stuff.
Overpromise
and underdeliver. So, So what did you think? I mean, generally, not just the Iowa game. What games jumped out at you? What games surprised you over the weekend?
Clemson losing and LSU losing. Florida State must really be for real.
There you were talking about like preseason number 8 against preseason number 5. So that doesn't shock me too much. That one doesn't. But Clemson getting, I mean, Duke just abused them.
I was a little surprised. Illinois, I don't know if you saw that game. I watched the end of it. Very fortunate to win.
Toledo,
they had to do it basically to walk off field goal.
Yeah, and Purdue going down to Fresno State, you know, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. That
I mean, considering
good
that the
10.
Guy, considering that the guy that they brought in when Brohm left, considering that the guy they brought in was Illinois' former defensive coordinator, it kind of shocked me that they just got Fresno State. Anytime they needed to move the ball, they did. I mean, it was just like, well, okay, we need to do it, so we do it.
But
and they,
the most,
you know, they,
the most interesting game though had to be Nebraska blowing it against Minnesota last Thursday. They had that game won. They really did, and they just basically frittered it away. I mean, they're snake bit.
Yeah, they are a little bit. I would agree, but you know, in that Purdue game, former Hawkeye, not Charlie Jones, but Tyrone Tracy had both a rushing touchdown and a kickoff return touchdown, 98-yard kickoff return. So nice to see him getting a little, action and whatnot. So if you remember who I said the breakout player was going to be on defense a couple weeks ago, I said it was going to be Jay Higgins. Did he not have a monster game?
Yes.
I totally nailed that.
He did.
You called that one right.
He emerged as a, kind of a real team leader on the defense.
Yeah, I actually heard him
interviewed. I think he had a great game. Now, Nick Jackson didn't have as many, wasn't as prominent, didn't have very many tackles, if any. But they're saying anyway that he sort of is the AJ Eads role, you know, more in coverage, and he did a pretty good job there. So
I think he is playing out of position. I think Jay Higgins is playing the mic spot, and I'm not sure that he's a natural mic, but he's certainly adapted well. But I think Nick Jackson is a natural mic, so I think he's playing. I think he's playing the Leo or Will spot, and you know, depending on, you know, whether they use the cash or whatever. So, you know, I think that'll come around easily. I mean, you talk about, but I mean, I just don't feel the only thing I think about on defense or on linebacker is depth. I mean, it's, you know, depth is a bit of a quick concern maybe, but certainly not the starters. They're not a concern at all. So what about the Notre Dame, I forgot who they played, but I mean, it seems like they're sort of on a roll. This kid from Wake Forest, Sam Hartman,
we'll find out on how much of a roll they're on in about 3 weeks.
Yeah, what are they? Is that the Ohio State when they're at Ohio?
Yeah, Ohio State. Yeah.
Oh, that's it. That's we'll in
that
South
goes.
Bend. So they beat Tennessee.
Ohio State was a little bit lackluster, I thought, against Indiana. I don't think Indiana's very good, but I mean, they took care of business, but. You know, it was 23-3. It was, you have to cut all teams, I think. You know, when we get to Iowa, I'd say this too, a little bit of slack in the first game. Michigan was, you know, solid, but they weren't spectacular in their win. Certainly I'd say that for Ohio State. They say the biggest improvements between the first and second game. Let's see if that's true.
Yeah, and you know, hopefully it can be. Northwestern shocked me. They went to Rutgers, I know, and they weren't expected to win, but I mean they looked like bad. I don't know.
The scale of the loss was was a little. I think when we went through the games last week, I picked Rutgers simply because it was at Rutgers, and you know, but they dominated the game.
Yeah, and I You know, I'm not sure so sure that Pat Fitzgerald didn't get bounced at the right time for him, because I'm not sure that was a matter of coach. I don't think that was a matter of coaching, you know.
The cupboard was kind of bare, is what you're saying?
Yeah. Didn't really have it, you know, and that's going to be...
It's going to unfortunately be like the Northwestern of old. They may not win a game this year.
Yeah, it may end up being just like... you know, the Northwestern that we grew up on, the Northwestern my parents used to take me to although first couple of years that we went, they were actually good. Maury Daniu, they actually finished second in the Big Ten 1 year. That's going to be interesting.
They had like Mike Adamley, one late 60s, early 70s. Yeah. They're pretty good.
Exactly. Some good games this weekend in the Big Ten. Indiana State, Indiana, I don't know about that, but Illinois, Kansas. Illinois at Kansas, could be a really good game. Kansas is favored over under.
Kansas has really improved in the last year or two. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Ohio State, Youngstown State, that's a gift game. It's a payback game. Penn State, Delaware is sort of the same thing, probably. Yeah. Nebraska going to Colorado. Is this going to be a blowout, do you think? I did not really watch Colorado TCU, so I don't know.
And, you know, that's the game I left out because I thought, you know, maybe that I didn't know what to expect from Colorado. But, man, you got to give it to Deion Sanders. He had him ready, and I think it's going to be another heartbreak for Nebraska. I don't see him winning out there in Boulder.
Yeah, I mean, Colorado's only –
Nebraska's – yeah.
Colorado's only favored by 3, which is kind of a shock, given that Nebraska didn't score 10 points. But the over-under is 59.5. So that's kind of, you know, they're either counting on, you know, and I just don't know. You know, TCU was ranked, but I think that was based on them making the playoff last year. I think they had some significant losses, not the least of which was Max Duggan. So
I think you're right. I think you're right about that. But they were ranked 17th, and it was at TCU.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Oh, and Deion, you know, let's face it. I know a lot of people say that they mistake his flamboyance and some of his – he did drop the race card later on, which I, you know, kind of disappointed. He said, it's a black player – coach with 70% black players, and people here don't like that. Well, you know what? You had how many people at your spring game? I mean, you know, that's kind of – disingenuous. I don't know why he decided to drop that, but other than that, I think it's part of his flamboyance. I think people like him and want him to succeed. I don't know that, you know, I know a lot of coaches don't approve of their wholesale turnover on the roster, but I don't know that, you know, you got to kind of root for the guy, you know.
That's true. It was kind of a pretty extraordinary thing about what they did with where he got rid of basically all the players and then went to the portal to get almost all the players he has.
Yeah.
But they were, you know, maybe that's the game plan for what to do, because that program was going nowhere fast. And, you know, when they got him and he just, you know, wiped the slate clean, and you got to say it kind of paid off.
Yeah.
So far.
I mean, yeah, so far it's one game, you know, they still got to go through a Pac-10 season against USC and Oregon. And, you know, I think that some of those kids that were D1A, you know, whatever FBS players or FCS players, I think certainly proved themselves capable. I mean, his son was a number one recruit, I believe, at one point, or the top quarterback, you know, when he came, you know, and chose, you know, Jackson State. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, I don't know. I just can't see Nebraska staying with them, you know, and I don't understand the line on that. I mean, sort of Purdue at Virginia Tech is only 3 points, you know, whereas Michigan UNLV is 36.5. What do you think the spread is on the Iowa State game right now?
I believe the last I saw was like about 3 points. Iowa's favorite.
4 now. It's up to 4.
Oh, is it 4?
So, yeah, it's 4.
A little bit surprised because Iowa State had a pretty good win, although it was basically through some their offense didn't do much, even though they won pretty easily. But you know, at Ames, this game, it always makes me nervous because we've seen good Iowa teams lose in Ames.
Yep.
And The '02 team lost Iowa State.
Yeah.
We can go through the history of it, but I'm always a little bit leery about Iowa State for that reason. And I just say this, if Iowa doesn't turn the ball over, I don't see how we lose, even if we're not spectacular on offense. I think we'll just be I think Iowa State is going to struggle offensively against the Iowa defense. Iowa State does have a solid defense. It'll be a good test for Iowa, but I think we'll see some improvement from Iowa in the run game. And I think I actually thought McNamara looked pretty good.
Yeah,
and one thing that did improve on the offensive line, it seemed to me, was the pass blocking. They need to work on the run blocking.
Yeah.
I think that'll come though. I think in fairness to Utah State, I think may not be a bad team.
Well, and I think they sold out to stop the run, and it basically killed
them.
They
did.
You know, it killed them early, and you know, once that lead was there, I don't think, you know, I'm not saying we were hiding stuff from Iowa State. That's, you know, that's kind of crazy, but you know, they certainly weren't, you know, they ran some plays they didn't need to run at the time they ran them. And I hesitate to say just stupid play calling, although the jet sweep has got to, I'm just tired of that, the way we run it. It's not really even a jet sweep.
Well, when they're stacking the line, you don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an end around.
I think we could have helped ourselves on the run side by throwing more short passes when they're stacking the box. And they're going to see this. We're going to see this in all games until you do something to make them pay. You got to just come out with the mindset of we're going to throw short passes all over the place, force them off the line. And by the way, with Cade McNamara, you can do it. Didn't you think it was refreshing to see when he goes back and he was checking off and calm in the pocket and moving around, throwing the ball? I mean, it's so great to have a quarterback doing that.
And he seemed to be
about the last 3 years.
Yeah, he had a couple throwaways that he was very smart on. You could see he didn't let it bother him in any way. I mean, I hate to say that about Spencer Petras because I think the guy gave it his all. I just think there's a huge difference. I mean, there's a general calm on the field. There just seems to be less chaos out there. So, you know, at least this one game. So, you know, that'll be interesting. Northwestern hosts UTEP. And they are a 1.5-point underdog, which to me.
Well,
know,
I don't know too much
jumping.
About UTEP, but yeah, it's just you know, Northwestern may be one of the worst FBS teams in the country. You know, it's just flat out the case. You know, they'd struggle in the MAC.
UTEP lost to Jacksonville State. Not Jackson State, but Jacksonville State, and then beat Incarnate Word. Isn't that the same school? Incarnate Word, isn't that the school that Nebraska also almost lost to 1 year, if I remember correctly? So
yeah, I think Iowa State also almost lost to them 1 year.
Yeah, so.
But oh, by the way, and you know, at the game Saturday, Iowa State,
there's
going to be a special appearance.
Tell us who is the two people that are appearing there.
Matt Whitaker is going to be who I like a lot. Trump's assistant attorney general is going to be accompanying Trump at the game. And of course, if you remember, Whitaker played tight end for Hayden Fry back in the 90s.
Exactly.
Good, great Iowa. In addition to being, I think, a great lawyer, I like the guy. I hope he runs for office again in Iowa. He did run in a primary 1 year about 10, 15 years ago, didn't win. But, you know, maybe he'll run again. And, he's Trump's attorney general. And if Trump gets in, he might be attorney general again. Who knows? But anyway, they're going to be there. And
not,
it should be, it should be kind
not,
of,
what's his name?
Yeah. And hopefully Whitaker will, you know, Trump obviously will probably not want to take sides. But at least privately, Whitaker will sway Trump to the Hawkeyes.
Oh, I think, you know, but now have they said, why is he going? Why is Trump going to the game? I don't get that.
Well, it's called the Iowa caucuses. It's the first of the,
yeah, but that's,
you know,
not until, yeah,
January.
That's not until, yeah. So I think it's great that
I mean,
he's going, but
Yeah.
I don't know. It might have been that Whitaker said, hey, you know, you ought to go to the game. It's a great way to get a little publicity. You don't even have to really say, I don't know what's going to happen, you know, whether he's just going to show up and wave to the crowd or whether he might come out at halftime and say something. Yeah, you know how that's going to go. There's going to be people that will boo if that happens. So
well, there are people that are saying they're not going to go to the game now and all that, and it's like, okay.
Well, fine,
you know.
Don't go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, only a moron gives up tickets to a game like that, you know? I mean, I'm serious.
No kidding.
It's just,
they're only punishing themselves if they do that.
Yeah, I mean,
because he's there, I mean, that's basically, you know, if Biden was there, I'm sure, you know, first of all, Biden wouldn't go because he would get booed. But I wouldn't not go to the game because he was going to show up.
No, exactly. I mean, that's.
I mean, you know, come on.
Iowa football is a lot more important than politics. I mean, it's, you know, I'm sorry, but it is.
Exactly.
You know,
I think it's a good move for Trump.
Yeah. So, okay, let's recap our game then. So, the opening kickoff return, obviously we know that we've got, Caleb, in addition to Caleb Johnson, it looks like that's down. We had the semi-blocked punt that still went 38 yards, by the way. I mean, only Toyer Taylor could pull.
The best survival of a blocked punt that I've ever seen.
I know. Yeah, only Torrey Taylor could pull that off. So, I mean, but special teams looked good, no doubt. T. Bodie just messaged and reminded us, pointed out Trump was there in 2015. That's right. When, of course, we came from behind, we were down a couple times, and we actually
came from behind.
Yeah, I remember that was the game. T. Bodie is in. He says Iowa is in trouble. He says play calling sucked in three quarters. BF still sucked. I disagree on that. I don't think
that set off their season because it was a great come-from-behind win. You know, the first half didn't look good, but then Iowa slowly came and dominated, and C.J. Beathard made some great plays, and Iowa, you know, ended up winning by 14 or something like that.
Yeah, but so Vivek Ramaswamy will also be there, as will Nikki Haley. So, to give you props, T. Bodie says you could call a better game than Brian Ferentz. I still think it was not a matter. I think it was a matter. It wasn't so much hiding from Iowa State as much as it was, let's just get some of this stuff down in play work on some of the basics in game conditions versus practice conditions. And against somebody that's not our own defense
on that too. Cause if you remember at the end, I don't know if you saw this, but Iowa could have tried to score more points. They got pretty conservative in the fourth quarter after they took and he said, look, remember they got a touchdown in garbage time, literally in about a minute to play. It was 24-6. We could have got 27, 30, maybe 31. But he goes, that's not the way Kirk Ferentz does it. You know, it's the NFL mindset. You just do what you need to do to win the game.
Yeah.
And that's what they do. They don't try to run it up. And so they were pretty concerned, especially after Cade McNamara. And I think, you know, look, I was disappointed in the run game a little bit, but I think that, like you said, I think that if you're going to criticize Ferentz for anything, Brian Ferentz, it would be, why didn't we try a little bit more to counter the stacking of the eight, nine players, you know, stacking the line by just doing a lot more. You know, we had one good play early that helped in one of the drives with a really nice screen pass. We should have done a little more of that. And how about just some quick dropbacks and throws?
Yeah.
Middle or off to the side. Off the line.
You know, everybody always says, well, every Iowa players depend on tight ends and all that stuff. Well, you know, that continues, but that's partly because, you know, I think the game is built, you know, the Iowa plan is kind of built around that. It's not so much that they can't recruit wide receivers or they can't do that. I mean, Seth Anderson, who Avid Mike said was his got player, you could argue that he was, you know, he made a couple good catches.
Yeah,
I thought
he looked pretty good, actually.
He got that separation, you know, it was a great, again, that's what I'm saying. You know, Utah State paid for selling out to the run early. So once they did, we didn't need to exploit anything. Now, like I said, I'm tired of that stupid jet sweep. But by and large, you know, we didn't call a bad game, I don't think. I mean, I think
so a lot of people that, you know, are upset, that got upset, you know, we didn't win 42 to nothing and that kind of thing. I just say, look, get over it a little bit. Yeah, you know, I would have liked to see a little bit more assertion on the run game by the offensive line, but I think they'll come along. And we had several – I mean, it's going to happen the first game – procedure penalties that kind of hurt some drives.
And again,
you know,
that's
those things
that happens
get better
in the first game. Yeah. I think
Iowa State game is going to be a key. And I expect Iowa – look, the thing I worry about more than, you know, to the offensive line, were they good enough? The thing that worries me the most about Iowa's offense is keeping McNamara healthy. We need to have this guy in. And he really is I mean, we really need him. And I just worry that he's got a bum leg and he's gonna have troubles getting through the whole season. That's the thing that kind of scares me.
Yeah.
If you tell me he's gonna play the rest of the year and he'll play, you know, almost all the game every game, then I don't really have too much to worry about.
Yeah, I would agree. I think I'm not worried about our running backs. We didn't light it up in the run game, but you know what? Again, as long as we can attack other places, then it doesn't matter. Let them sell out to stop the run. We showed that we've got a good. I mean, that play to Seth Anderson early, beautiful, because I mean the play action, it wasn't really even a play action.
Yep.
It sort of was, but it wasn't a traditional play action. Now I'm
and how about just a great throw too? That was a great throw by McNamara. You know.
Yeah, and he had that other throw to Reganey. That you know, was sort of over the shoulder. Reganey had to turn, you know, but I mean, it was
should
perfectly thrown. He threw it exactly where he had to throw it, you know, and which, you know, Beathard could make that throw. Stanzi could make that throw.
Yeah,
Petras couldn't make that throw. I mean, it's simple as that. You know, Stanley often could, but Stanley also could also throw it out of the stadium too. So I mean, that was kind of. but no,
that's,
I mean, he threw that exactly where he needed to. It was not going to get picked off. It was not going to get defended. I mean, the receiver had to make the play, and he didn't. But, I mean, it wasn't a perfectly thrown ball, but it was perfectly executed, let's put it that way. So, I mean, that's
– And,
again,
you know, one thing Saturday reinforced, too, is that the Big Ten West, you get outside of Iowa, maybe Wisconsin, although I'm not convinced. Big Ten West is kind of weak. Iowa is, you know, Utah State's going to be comparable to a lot of the Big Ten teams Iowa's going to play this year, I think.
Don't forget Utah State.
The Rutgers,
you know,
the Northwestern.
Within recent years, Utah State was actually a pretty decent team in their conference. I mean, they weren't.
Yeah, well, they were even 500 last year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're not a bad, you know, they've gone bowling like 4 out of the last 6 years, something like that. I mean, they're a decent team. Are they a great team? You know, no, of course not, but. We wouldn't be playing them if we, you know, I don't think if they were. So, I mean, that's kind of.
Well, let's look at it this way, too. Look at it this way, too. If also, I think it'll make it feel better. Compare the game, this game against Utah State to the game against South Dakota State last year, that 7-3 with 2 saves. That was pathetic. The offense is markedly better than that offense.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I mean, it's not even comparison in a way. I mean, I think the line, while not perfect, is better. We didn't see all kinds of stupid sacks. We didn't see glaring weaknesses in the run game. We saw, you know, the holes were there, but not really, you know. But, I mean, basically, we got some decent runs. We don't need to break every play. And so, and again, you know, they seem to utilize the screen pass at times, although I think we tend to utilize tight end screens more than we need to, but that's, you know, whatever. That's a philosophy. That's not a, you know, I mean, it's sort of when people say, oh, you know what we need to do? We need to run a spread. Why? Because we can't, even because we can't run our base offense, now you think changing it all up is going to make it better? I mean, if you don't have the personnel to run your base, you're certainly not going to do better by suddenly, you know, implementing a completely different system, you know? I mean, that's just...
I agree on that.
I noticed
so,
one thing
you know, I'm not going to say it's a perfect game by any stretch, and,
no.
You know, the offensive line needs to get better, but I saw some things with the Iowa's offense this year with McNamara in that we didn't have last year. It's just flat out, you know, you just flat out have to say that's just a fact.
Yeah.
And so, you know, from that, if you look, think of it that way, and the first game, I think we'll be all right.
Yeah, you know, the T. Bodie nailed it, the WGJS, the white guy jet sweep that we've been running. I've been reading now that might be the fastest guy on the team. I don't really know that, but I mean, what I didn't really look and see, because, you know, it's hard to get every, you know, to line up and see who's actually on the field sometimes. I hope they're not just bringing him in on those jet sweep things. I mean, if that's the case.
Are you talking about that Wetchen guy or whatever?
Yeah, Caden Wetchen.
I was like, where did he come from?
No, he's been on the team.
So you think he's a budding Tim Dwight or something?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think Keegan Johnson was that, if anybody was, which I don't know how he
did. You know, I had reservations about, I'd like to get your thoughts on this, Hank. I don't like that. I don't like them using Cooper DeJean on punts. The guy, I mean, that to me, that's just setting him up for injury. I thought we were going to go with Caleb Brown or somebody like that. We need to have him. We don't need to have him get hurt. It's just another opportunity for him to get hurt.
But I hearken back to something Tom Osborne said. You remember Mike Rozier when he won the Heisman in 1983? They talked about Rozier was back on kickoffs. Now, I know kickoffs and punts are somewhat different, but they talked about, they said, you know, it's kind of dangerous putting your Heisman Trophy winning running back there. And Tom Osborne's answer was, I want my best man back there on kickoffs. Mike Rozier's my best man. I think that's what you have with Cooper DeJean. It's really simple. He's your best option. Arlen Bruce, when Gene went out last year, you know, he had that fumbled punt. I just don't know what else you have. I don't know that you can, unless they have. I mean, if there's somebody who's comparable, fine, but I don't know that there is. So I don't see the point of putting somebody else back there just to save Cooper.
Yeah, it just makes me nervous, kind of holding my breath every time that guy fields a punt because I'm afraid he's going to get a hit that's going to, you know, take him out.
I
don't know. I mean, you might be right.
Take the.
I mean, I definitely agree that he's one of the best players we have. So you know, that's no doubt. But
did Wampa ever return punts? I mean, he's another one that could be. But again, you don't want your best, all your best defensive backs back there because you cut into that, you know, your depth.
Right.
There.
I think somebody like maybe Nwankwo or, I mean, obviously got somebody to do it.
Caleb Brown.
I will say that
DeJean, you know,
was
Caleb
pretty
Brown
good about making the fair catch if it was a little hairy.
So I know,
you know,
I
which
noticed
is good,
that
you know.
Keegan, I noticed that, speaking of, when I talk about Keegan Johnson, I noticed that he did not play for Kansas State over the weekend. Don't know if there's anything to that, or if he just didn't crack the, you know, I can't believe, as good as he was at Iowa when he was on, that he isn't good enough to crack the lineup at Kansas State. On the other hand, maybe, I mean, who knows, but I also saw that Arlen Bruce is definitely not, he's off out of the program at Oklahoma State. So,
yeah. Well, I think he's got the ban. I don't know if it's a permanent ban or just for the year.
I think it might be.
He, you know, pretty egregious what he did, I thought. Yeah. You know,
right
up there with that Deckers at Iowa State.
Yeah.
So.
But Deckers is still appealing his. So, speaking of other former Hawks, you know, I talk about Tyrone Tracy, Desmond Hudson had a touchdown for UNI. Remember, he was a recruit back in like 2018 or 19, maybe 20. You see, you know, and it was one of those, hey, we recruited a 6'2" or 6'3" receiver, so all our problems are solved. And he never cracked the lineup. And I think he got.
And also on that former Hawkeye front, I'll just remind you, the NFL opener tomorrow. You're going to Jack Campbell's starting, and I think you're going to see a lot of Sam LaPorta also playing for the Lions. They're both playing on for the Lions, so that could be interesting.
Yeah, so and a couple guys got cut and then some resigned. I don't know. I have to look at the latest on that. I mean, I go somewhere.
Yeah, it was
Desmond King was one of them, believe it or not.
Yeah, Desmond King. Yeah, I think he signed with the Eagles, though, or something like that.
Yeah, he did. I don't remember if it was the Eagles, but, yeah, he definitely signed with someone else. So, I mean, you know,
And also, Hank, you're going to love it. Opening Sunday, Bears-Packers.
Oh, God. I wish I could be reasonably confident in Bears, but I haven't been. I mean, wait a second. This is the year. This is the Bears' year. I talked about it before in 2017 when I think they went to the NFC Championship game or whatever, and I called it. Every 6 years when they get the favorable last place schedule, they become good because they get the last place schedule. So I think I got it right. I think it was 23 or 24, your NFC North champion Chicago Bears.
The Monday night game is Bills and the Jets. So Josh Allen against the debut for Aaron Rodgers, the Jets.
Yeah, that'll be a good one. Plus, the Bills got some do we still have – is Micah Hyde still with the Bills? I'm not sure. AJ Epinesa certainly is.
And also that guy that I can't remember his name now that collapsed in the game for the Bills, the defensive back. He's going to be back in action.
Yeah, he is. Gosh, what's his name? Is it Damari Bryant? No.
You're right. Damar something, I think.
Yeah, but yeah, he's.
Knows. He can text in.
I'm just looking for Damar Hamlin. Damar Hamlin, and yes, Micah Hyde is still with the Bills, but I don't see. They had Ike Butker, but he's gone. I think he got went somewhere else. But they also have AJ Epinesa still. So that's and Christian Kirksey. Christian Kirksey, remember he got cut by.
Yeah, he was a great player. I thought at Iowa.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He absolutely was. So that'll be former Hawks have been making George Kittle, of course, will I'm sure make some noise.
And Hawkinson playing with the Vikes. So
yeah. Yeah, that's the hard part as a former Bears fan, because now, at that time when in the heyday, you didn't have, you had Joel Hilgenberg, I guess, playing for the Saints. You had Jay Hilgenberg playing for the Bears, and you had Mark Bortz playing for the Bears. But so that was a natural, but now it's like they get scattered. I mean, it's sort of like, it's why I never really got into fantasy football. You're not really rooting for your favorite team. You're rooting for guys that you don't almost really don't care about. So, that's kind of tough. So, okay. So let's talk this weekend. Let's get down to brass tacks, so to speak. Let's call some games. Let's call some Big Ten games. Let's see if there's a couple of high profile games. Notre Dame, North Carolina State, in Raleigh or wherever that is. That could be a good game. But Utah, man, that's not really a good one. Okay, let's go to Nebraska, Colorado. Call it. Does Colorado cover the 3? And does it go over 59?
Yeah, I think
and a half?
They do. I think they do. You said it was over under 59, which is interesting because you've also pointed out how Nebraska got 10 points in the Minnesota game. So they must if that's over under 59, they must be thinking Colorado's going to score a lot of points, and I think they might be right. But Nebraska will get more than 10 points because Colorado's offense looks good, but their defense is a little bit suspect. It was like a basketball game that scored 45-42. So,
yeah.
But I think they cover. I think they cover, and I think Nebraska is going to be 0-2.
Yeah, here's a game nobody's talking about: Ole Miss, Tulane, both ranked 20 and 24. I haven't seen either one, but that's an interesting game. Texas A&M at Miami should also be good.
Yes.
And then, that's pretty much it. Oh, Appalachian State plays number 17 North Carolina. That's all. You never know what Appalachian State's going to do.
Yeah, that's
so,
right. Yes, Michigan.
I don't know if Oklahoma is going to score 800 points or if Oregon's going to score that many, but Oregon's playing Texas Tech now, so that's going to be. But Wisconsin goes out to Washington State. Wisconsin.
Yeah,
has
Washington
6-point
State
favorite.
Had a good first game. They better watch out.
Yeah, they. But Wisconsin is a 6-point favorite, which is kind of bizarre. But yeah, Washington State beat up on Colorado State, so.
That game's at Pullman too. I don't know. So I got 6 points. I'm taking Washington State.
Yeah, I think I would too. Now Florida State 30 and a half over Southern Miss. That's too much. I'm sorry. But, you know, it's funny. Looking at some of the teams ranked in the Pac-12, in a couple of years, Oregon State and Washington State are going to be frigging orphans. I mean, that's hard to believe. They're both now Washington State.
I feel bad
ranked,
for
Oregon State is.
Yeah, you got Cal and Stanford are going to the ACC. What a joke. They're in the Atlantic Coast Conference.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just these conference names become, you know, meaningless. But, I assume what's going to happen probably with Oregon State, Washington, they're going to end up in the Mountain West or the WAC or, you know, some of those lesser conferences. What choice do they have? The Big 12 doesn't want them.
If I'm an admin at either of those schools, I'm on the phone with my legislators, my state legislators, and I am because let's face it, state legislators will don't think about it, but once they see what kind of money there could be in the Big Ten, I'm on the phone and I'm saying, look, tell them if they don't take us, then they can't have Oregon, you know, and I'm doing the same thing in Washington. You know what? You don't take both of our schools. You don't get either of them. We'll block the move. You know, those are state schools. That's what I'd be doing. I mean, I don't care if Oregon and Washington don't come to the Big Ten. That won't upset me in the least.
No, I don't.
And so,
yeah, I felt we didn't need to expand either so fast. But
I think it's market. It's all about market. With Washington, you get Seattle. With Oregon, you get nominally you get Portland. So that's what that was about. Obviously. So,
well, and also, my brother was talking to, you know, with, you got Cal and Stanford and, you know, going to the ACC, right? These are two schools that don't fill up their stadiums every Saturday.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, which was part of the whole problem with the Pac-12 was that it seemed to be kind of a lukewarm conference. It had become that way because they just, you know, there just didn't seem to be the excitement that you see in the rest of college football.
Yeah.
For college football,
well,
it's
taken place. I mean, because nobody on the East Coast cares about them. That's why. So it's kind of, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's kind. I feel sad for Oregon State and Washington.
What do you think would happen if those legislatures were to do something like that? First of all, Washington and Oregon probably schools wouldn't be very happy if they try to do that. But let's assume that something like that happens.
Remember,
what do you think the Big Ten's reaction would be? Fine, we don't take any.
Yeah, supposedly that was the case that you couldn't get Oklahoma without getting Oklahoma State. And then look how that went.
Right.
You know, in the SEC. So, I mean, I don't think it's really effective necessarily. But if I'm from those schools, that's the first case I make. I don't go looking for a conference. I go to my legislators because, you know what, the legislators are, man, those people, once they see the kind of money that Big Ten schools are getting, they're going to – you know, these people throw like Obama does. They throw like girls. They're unathletic as hell. But what do they see? They see money. They see the kind of money flowing through athletics. So God, they're all over it. So they would find an audience with a Washington or Oregon legislator and say, look, push it. You know, we do this for me, yo me, so to speak. So I don't know. I'm not sure it'll happen, but it would be interesting to see it happen. To see it. What would happen if they made that kind of noise, you know? So, okay. So let's talk. But go ahead.
No, that's, I was just going to say that they are kind of just sitting out there. What's going to happen with them? So you do wonder.
Yeah, I feel bad for them. But here's why. Part of the reason I feel bad for them. There was a guy on one of the sports talk shows on Sirius XM that called in and said, boy, we in Iowa are really happy about all this blah, 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 and all this expansion. And Jim Delaney's what made it possible. And I'm thinking, you know what? If this can happen to an Oregon State and a Washington State, don't think it can't happen to an Iowa or an Iowa State or a Wisconsin even, you know? I mean,
yeah, I mean,
at what,
you know,
at
you
what
get,
point,
think,
at
get
what
too
point
clever
does
by
Penn,
half, and then, you know, we're out in the cold or something.
Yeah, at what point does Ohio State say at a Big Ten meeting, you know what, we're what brings eyes to these TV networks, you know, and they certainly have a point, you know, and now I don't think at this point the Big Ten would ever resort to that, but that's certainly what's happened in other conferences. It's what happened in the Big 12 with Texas. It's what's happening in a little bit in the ACC with Florida State. I mean, I can't imagine Florida State's
I would say one thing about the Big Ten, and it is kind of a cultural thing, I think, that still exists even with all the money now. And that is they've never kicked anybody out.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone's ever left.
Well, University of Chicago.
I'm not talking about, 1900. Yeah. I mean, in the last 100 years, okay?
Right.
You're right. But I mean, in the last 100 years, there's been, or even, from after that.
Whatever.
From 1900. Last 120 years, that's never happened. No one's ever left, and no one's ever been kicked, removed.
Right.
And I don't think it will. That's just the way it is.
I mean, for instance, you hear about the SEC. When an SEC school gets targeted by the NCAA, which is a joke now, but back then, the other schools would turn tail and stay out of the fray. That's never happened. Like when the Big Ten, both when Ohio State was going through their stuff, when Penn State was going through their stuff, Delaney and the legal team and everybody else and representatives from the other schools were there at some of those meetings because they stick. I think the Big Ten does stick together a little more. I don't doubt that. So. It's happening to Oregon State and Washington State, so don't think it can't happen to us. So let's talk the Big Ten games. Start Indiana State at Indiana. Two winless teams so far.
I think Indiana probably gets their first win.
Yeah, no line or anything because it's Indiana State's FCS. Illinois at Kansas. Yeah. Kansas by 358 for the over/under.
Wow, that's good. That's going to be a good game, and I don't really have a good feel on either that game. I think Illinois struggled a little bit, and it's at Kansas, so I'm going to go with the home team. I pick Kansas to win it.
I pick Kansas, and I think they cover. Ohio State, Youngstown State, we don't even need to discuss. Penn State, Delaware. I don't think we need to discuss. We've sort of discussed Colorado, Nebraska. But I think we'll both agree that Nebraska wins and covers, right? The 3 points. I mean, Colorado wins and covers the 3 points. Purdue at Virginia Tech. The over/under on that is only 46, and Virginia Tech's a 3 point.
What does Virginia Tech do in their first game?
They won. I don't think it was anything remarkable. It was like not Richmond. It was Old Dominion, and they won by 36-17. So, I think it was one of those.
Purdue had a bad loss at home, loss to Princeton State. So until they actually beat somebody, I think they're going to have a tough time on the road at Virginia Tech.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just wondering if they – and I think you're right. I just wonder, could this be one of those bounce backs? You know, Purdue has been famous for that, so, at least under the Brohm years. You know, they would lose to Eastern Michigan, and then they'd go beat Ohio State. You know, I mean, that kind of thing.
Well,
so.
You know, that is an interesting game, and Purdue can, could really kind of turn things around and get some momentum if they could pull that game out. So they got a lot to play for.
Yeah. Michigan, UNLV, both undefeated. Michigan,
go out on the limb there and pick the Wolverines.
But 36 and a half points, though. 36 and a half points.
No, you know what? They won 30-3. Yeah, the 133. I don't think they cover it. I don't think they win by that.
I would agree. I don't think so either. I think they'll win by 28 maybe, but I don't think they cover. Agreed. UNLV's win was over Bryant, so I'm not sure that that's much of a one to throw confidence. Richmond, Michigan State. I think Michigan State. And in fact, that's an FCS, so that's doesn't even have a line. What Wisconsin, Washington State, six. Wisconsin by six in Pullman. What's your final verdict?
You know, I would say this. Washington State. I can't remember who they beat, but they had a pretty good win.
Yeah.
Oh, they beat Colorado State at Colorado State. Yeah. As a matter of fact.
Yeah.
I'll say this. I think in a squeaker, Wisconsin pulls it out.
Okay. Without covering, then.
Three points?
No, 6 points.
I think it'll be they'll win like 24-21, something like that.
So then you're saying they won't cover because it's six.
That's about right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll say Wisconsin does win. I think they're all right. Yeah, I think they'll win and they'll cover, but, man, I'm insecure. I think that's a potential upset alert there.
Okay. Temple at Rutgers. Rutgers a 9-point favorite and a 44 over/under.
I think Rutgers. I think you got to give them some credit. They look pretty good against Northwestern, who obviously is struggling. But I like Schiano. I think they're gonna. Rutgers is a team that you better not take too lightly.
Okay. Minnesota, Eastern Michigan. Minnesota is a 20.5 point with an over-under of 48.
I think with Michigan, Minnesota wins. I think they'll cover. I don't know about the 48 over. What was the point spread? 20?
20.5.
Okay, so, yeah, I think they win something like 31-10.
I'm going to say they cover. Yeah, Eastern Michigan's got a win. I forgot who it was against.
They're not good.
Oh, Howard.
Yeah, I don't think they're
Howard.
That good.
It was against Howard, yeah. So that's not a, you know, that's obviously not a big, you know, I mean, it's a nothing score. UTEP Northwestern. UTEP a 1.5 point favorite, over under 38.5.
You know what? I'm going to go on a limb and say this is the one game Northwestern wins. At home, they beat UTEP.
Okay, so let's see what UTEP – let's go back. I forgot what UTEP – so they beat Jack. They lost to Jacksonville State and beat Incarnate Word. Yeah, I think this is it. I think you're right. I think Northwestern puts it all together and wins this one. So here's a decent one, Maryland and Charlotte. Maryland, 24.5 point, over under 51.5.
I think Maryland's a real deal. They're a tough team.
Yeah,
and they're not up at the level of the Penn States or the Ohio States or Michigan's out in the East, but they're like number four behind them maybe.
Yeah.
And I think I think they win. I think what was the point spread?
It is 24.5.
Yep, I think they. Charlotte. Is there any reason to think they're any good?
After a win, a 24-3 win over South Carolina State, no.
Okay. I think Maryland, explosive offense, I think they cover. I think they win pretty easily.
Okay, so here's the last one that's not an FCS one, and it's, of course, Iowa State. The line is -4. It is the lowest of the over – it's a lower over-under than Northwestern UTEP. Northwestern UTEP's 38.5. Iowa State's 36.5.
Okay. Well, I point out also Fox National broadcast, so that's a good deal for them. I'm not going to go against Iowa. I think Iowa's defense is going to be too much for the Iowa State offense. So I think Iowa wins 21-10. So they cover.
Okay. And do not cover the over-under, though. You're saying they're going to go under.
What's the over-under?
36.5.
I'm going to 21-10. They wouldn't, would they? Yeah. I'm going under. I like that score. Well, I'm going to say 21-10. Iowa State's got a good defense.
Yeah.
Their offense is not much. They don't have much for offense.
I'm going to say 24-14. So I'm going to say we cover and we get the over. Here's an interesting thing. So look at who we played and look at who Iowa State played. And when you look at the leaders in each game, you know, in each category, passing, Cade McNamara, rushing, Caleb Johnson. In other words, he's of the two teams. That's who's leading. Receiving, Luke Lachey. So, I mean, literally none of those, nothing on Iowa State's offense indicates, you know, any kind of offense to generate. Now, I don't know, who's that Rocco Beck, their quarterback? Is he any good, or is he just?
I think he has potential, but I don't think he's there yet, and he's going to be sorely tested by the Iowa defense.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. I mean, I don't know that. I just think the Hawks cover, and I think. I'll take the over. I'm going to say we win 24-14. We cover the over. We cover the spread. I think if we can score 24 points, I mean, it's kind of like last week. It's the same score basically. And, and I think it goes much the same way. I mean, that it's probably a garbage time touchdown last touchdown for Iowa State, and that there's really no.
And I do think, to qualify that a little bit, I do think there's a potential here, especially if Cade's looking good, playing, semi-healthy, where we come out early like we did against Utah State, and maybe it's and Iowa State just doesn't do much offensively. It's like a 28-3 win or something like that.
Yeah.
But I'll be a little more generous and say 21-10.
It's just really hard to, this game is always, Now, last year we lost it, obviously. It's almost like I don't even count last year as a loss because it was just such a stupid way to lose and everything. And some of those penalties and calls and all that
no
stuff.
No offense at all. And fumbling on the goal line. We're about to go 14-3. That game was over if we'd make it 14-3. And we couldn't do it.
Interesting. So who's not playing for, in addition to Hunter Deckers, they also don't have their leading returning rusher, Jarrell Brock.
Yes.
So, you know, he's not only not playing, he's gone from the program. So I don't know if he quit or if he was asked to leave or what happened. But
I think it was, those guys, Deckers, like you say, is appealing, but I think they were banned. I mean, what they did was pretty bad and they're out.
What did Brock do? I don't know. What did Brock do? What was his thing? I don't remember him, you know, seeing
him. I don't remember all the details. But those guys have all pled guilty, by the way, to misdemeanor counts. I don't know. Not Deckers. The ones who were underage for underage gambling. So you've got, you know, they've got that on their record now.
Right.
I don't, as far as Brock, I don't know. I think it was pretty egregious, though. He was up there in the class with Deckers and with Arlen Bruce. Yeah.
It was Jake Remsburg, Deckers, Jake Remsburg, Dodge Souser, and then, of course, Aaron Blum. And then baseball player Garrett Christensen. So.
Yeah, I do think there's a chance that Shannon wins his appeal to the extent that it's not a full season ban, that maybe just 5 or 6 games. Well, you know, we'll see.
I mean,
this year.
I just don't get why Brock is. I mean, I don't know if Brock, but what it doesn't say, it says that they've left the program. Brock and Isaiah Lee have left the program. So, who knows? You remember Brock was at one point high on Iowa, and then we ended up picking up Tyler Goodson, and so went Jarrell Brock and Breece Hall. Both of them were Iowa recruits, and once we took Tyler Goodson, those two basically didn't have offers anymore. And, you know, Breece Hall was a good back and everything, but I think Tyler Goodson is actually a more complete back. But Breece Hall was certainly a good back. I take nothing away from him. So,
absolutely.
And Jarrell Brock had skills, too, as well. I mean, it's sad that that
No,
happened.
That hurt him, losing him.
Yeah. I think the other thing that's not being really talked about, you're hearing it basically – from Iowa fans and Iowa, you know, there's no talk of this happening anywhere else, and we know it's got to be going on other places, you know.
Well,
I
think that's what got Ferentz so upset because, you know, what's going on? You could fill, like he, I think he said, you could fill Kinnick Stadium with the number of people involved in college football in this, and yet it's just Iowa and Iowa State that are getting singled out. Come on, what's going on here?
Yeah.
No Ohio State players or Michigan players, they're just lily white, you know, pure as the driven snow, you know, or Alabama or anybody else.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't, you know, and the thing is the season, I mean, you know, not only that, Shannon owned it, he admitted it, he didn't argue, you know, he totally took accountability, and then he still gets a season-long ban. I mean, that to me is just... That's ridiculous.
And he never bet on Iowa, and he was of age.
Yeah, he bet on Iowa basketball. He bet on Iowa women's basketball.
But I mean, not on Iowa. He never bet on any football game, so he was involved.
Yeah, almost everybody else bet.
Saying that he what he did that he shouldn't have been doing it, you know. But for the whole season, seems a little bit harsh.
Well, but again, you know, as Avid Mike pointed out, this isn't the old days where bookies come to you, you know. Most of this stuff is online betting. I mean, you're doing it, you know, like they talk about, they're using their mom's credit card. They're setting up, they're setting up accounts online. There's no dealing with Guido, the killer bookie, you know, here. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. That's what, that's
Big Lou. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what doesn't make sense about the whole thing. So I don't know. It's just, we'll see. We'll see how the appeal goes. I'm sure if the appeal goes as fast as the regular handing down of punishment did, he won't be back until the bowl game or something. I mean, that's how bad that is. So I don't know. Well, one other thing I saw, somebody was talking about Cade McNamara has another year after this. I mean, he still actually has a second year.
I think that's right. Yeah.
And then somebody was asking.
Yeah, they're listening, but he's got an extra year. He's got yeah. another year.
Yeah.
He's got two at Iowa if he wants it.
Yeah, somebody was saying, though, was asking, what about Jay Higgins? And somebody else said, Jay Higgins would be a fool to stay. He's definitely going to be playing on Sundays, and I agree. I mean, I think
– Well, that
think
may be true, but I think he's a junior, so I think he does have the option to come back next year.
Well, no, Higgins is listed as a senior. He's listed as a senior.
Oh, is he? I thought he was a junior. Okay,
But with the COVID stuff, you know, there's all that, you know, when did he come
yeah,
in?
Yeah,
you
sure
he
wouldn't have another
year
if he wanted it. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't see why.
Now Jackson, my understanding with Nick Jackson is that he's just one and done.
Yeah, he's one and done. He had already quote unquote used his COVID. He came in as a grad transfer, so and
yeah.
he just has the one. And I think that's the same with Dejon Parker as well. So Seth Anderson's only a sophomore. Rusty Faith, I think, or Fath or whatever, I think, is also a senior. So a couple of those guys are one and done, but. So be interesting to see. Well, we will talk more via text over the weekend when the game is in progress, of course. And then
you bet, and then
back next week. So thanks for being on. And I hope you enjoyed your beer. I enjoyed mine. And we will talk to you next week.
Okay.
Thanks,
take care, Hank. Thanks.
Talk to you later. Bye. Well, there you have it, folks. That is the thoughts this week of part of the crew, Mike and myself, have what we think is, I say the Hawks cover. I say they win in the cover, and I think they cover the over as well. But I'll send you out with this because this is just what it's all about.
Play fake. Beathard sets up deep in the pocket. Goes down the field for Smith.
Just awesome. Hey, but thanks for being here, folks. I want to thank Duck and T. Bodie for being in the chat room, Mike and Big Sister and a couple others I didn't recognize being on the phones. Have a great rest of your week. Be safe this weekend, and go Hawkeyes. We'll talk to you later, folks. Good night.